When everyone is on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing and context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Election College, episode number 295, FDR, part 4.
Let's throw a political party. Face it, the political scene sucks, but did it always? It's time for Election College, and class is in session. Now, your hosts, Jason Goff and Ben Smith.
Jason, in the last episode, I teased a little bit at the end there that we might see another run from FDR. And there's also 4 episodes to the FDR saga, so I guess you probably could have imagined he was probably going to be running for at least a third term.
It's like
maybe even a fourth or a fifth. Who knows?
Yeah, it's like 4 is the magic number, or 3 in this case. But we'll get into 4.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh man, foreshadowing.
There should be some, like, I should put some scary music here.
You probably should.
Yeah, Ben, when you're editing, if you're not too lazy, put in some scary music here. And if you are too lazy, just cut this part out. And if you don't do either one, people will hear it and laugh. Okay, we're good. Roosevelt is at the end of his second term, and he's thinking about running for a third term. Of course, George Washington kind of set the precedent, the idea that not run for more than 2 terms. And it's never really prescribed anywhere yet, but it's kind of just tradition. And FDR says, you know what? I'm not going to say whether or not I'm going to run, because I don't want anybody else seeking the nomination yet, because I don't want them to know whether or not I'm going to run.
Crazy guy.
And yeah, at the time, Germany is just like running rampant through Europe at the time. And Roosevelt's like, well, I have the experience. Things are going haywire. I probably should run.
Yeah, it's really interesting because on the domestic front, Wendell Willkie, we talked about him before. Mm-hmm. We did an episode about him. Go back and listen. He's like, hey, New Deal. That wasn't too bad. But on the whole international front, I think he's going to drive us into war. So vote Willkie. Yeehaw.
You think he said yeehaw? It was on his signs and stuff?
If it was, he would have won the election.
That's probably true. Well, at the 1940 Democratic Convention, Roosevelt basically didn't have any competition. I mean, he did have competition. He had one guy by the name of Farley. He lost. He had another guy. You might recognize him as Vice President Garner. And, of course, we'll do an episode about him later. But, his vice president decides to run against him in the primary. And he just kind of turns against Roosevelt during that second term. And Roosevelt's like, well, I mean, needless to say, man, you're not going to be my vice president again. So he goes and gets the Secretary of Agriculture named Henry Wallace. And he was very supportive of the New Deal, and he was very popular in the farm states, which is good considering he was the Secretary of Agriculture. And people were pretty okay with it, but not everybody. There were some that felt that he was too liberal. They were too conservative and he was too liberal, that he was too radical and eccentric, and that he would probably make Roosevelt lose.
Did we do an episode on him?
No, I don't think so.
Oh man, I can't wait for that episode. That's going to be fun.
It is going to be fun. So anyway, long story short, the race is basically tied.
Yeah. Unless you are a proponent of the Electoral College.
Dun, dun, dun.
Where Roosevelt, I was going to say spank, but that's probably not politically correct.
No, probably not.
Trounces Wilkie in the Electoral College, even though it was only 55% of the popular vote, but it was like 85% of the electoral vote. So there you have it. Roosevelt is the president again. The guy kept us out of war. Sounds familiar. And then by the time 1941 rolls around, you know what happens.
Yeah. We're going to skip across a lot of the nitty gritty stuff that happens that leads us into the war, but you're familiar. I mean, Pearl Harbor happens. Tragedy, of course, but it can't be ignored any longer. And so FDR says, all right, we're heading in. We're going to have to float China alone because they're really hurting right now because of Japan and Germany really going at them. We're probably going to end up dropping a nuke here pretty soon.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, a lot of what Roosevelt does on the domestic front in his first two terms, he does on the foreign policy. And probably the biggest thing that we see as a carryover from this is the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And these people make the final decisions on American military strategy. Up to that point, it was kind of like, well, the president does his thing. And he says what happens, but the United States isn't that heavily involved in foreign affairs up to this point. I mean, outside of the whole Latin America dealings that they had, the United States wasn't as huge of a military power at this point as it is now.
Well, and a lot of that you can attribute to Roosevelt from, you know, growing the military from, I think it was just under 200,000 to over 1.5 million, or right around 1.5 million. That's a lot of military growth in a very short amount of time. So that happens, and basically he meets with Churchill. They develop a plan, and then they establish the whole combined chiefs of staff thing to, I think, the combined chiefs of staff to help coordinate all this military policy and making sure that supplies are allocated and that the two entities work well together during the war. Then the Joint Chiefs of Staff comes along, which help him make the final decisions on all the strategy and everything that's happening. And of course, you know, there's the nuclear program happening, the Manhattan Project, etc., where these nuclear weapons are being developed. And Churchill is with Roosevelt on that as well. They're jointly pursuing it. So it's not long before Roosevelt comes up with the idea of the four policemen, you know, called themselves the Big Four. We know them as the Allied powers. It would be the United Kingdom, the United States, Soviet Union, and China. And they're all going to go against the German troops and the troops under their command and who are working alongside them, along with Japan.
So it's during this era that the concept of a union of nations reemerges very strongly. And in 1945, Stalin, Churchill, and Roosevelt hold a conference. And that establishes the United Nations. And they agree on the structure of the UN Security Council. And the purpose of the Security Council is to, quote, ensure international peace and security. We'll see how that goes in the decades afterwards. But the three work together, and with a balancing act of the Eastern Front dealing with the Japanese invasion of China, as well as other areas in the Pacific, and then on the Western Front dealing with Germany and Italy and the advances that they were making, including advances into Africa. Interestingly enough, it's during all of this that Roosevelt chooses Dwight Eisenhower to serve as the multinational coalition commander in Northern Africa. Kind of interesting. During this whole era, that the lines were a little bit more muddied between Democrats and Republicans. I think everybody was kind of finding their place. and perhaps working better together, regardless of their political persuasions. But anyway, the United States is now a world power with the beefing up of the military, and all the while, Roosevelt is changing it all up, changing U.S. foreign policy.
So back on the home front, while everything's going on, it's crazy because things are actually going kind of well as far as the economy goes. War tends to create jobs and create a void that people need to fill. So unemployment gets cut in half, and then it gets cut in half again a year later. And there's actually a labor shortage at this point. So you see a lot of African Americans and farmers and things like that, people like that coming into more developed areas and coming to manufacturing centers. And the fact is, the government is also spending a lot more money. So Roosevelt thinks, here's an idea. Anybody who makes over $100,000, everything over $100,000 they make, we're going to tax them 99.5% for all the income over that $100,000. And the proposal fails. So he says, okay, I've got this executive order sitting here. Let's say we're going to do 100,000 or 100% on anything over 25,000, which Congress is like, no, you're not going to do that either. So they end up passing the Revenue Act of 1942. And does we see tax rates as high as 94%, which is obviously much, much higher than we had before or after that fact. And he even says, hey, would you mind to tax anything that's considered unreasonable as far as a profit? You know, whether it's a corporation or an individual, we really just need to get like $10 billion raised. So let's figure out how we can do that.
Yeah. Needless to say, government is huge. He states that all Americans should have the right to adequate medical care, good education, a decent home, and a useful and well-paying job. These go over like a lead balloon. However, the GI Bill creates massive benefits for returning soldiers, and both houses of Congress and both parties unanimously pass the GI Bill and signed that into law in June of 1944. More than half of the Americans, 15 million Americans who served in World War I, benefited from the GI Bill. All of this stuff is happening, and Roosevelt's health is declining. He is a chain smoker. He has high blood pressure, coronary artery disease, angina, and congestive heart failure. However, the physicians, because they're loyal to their president, right, are saying he's doing great. And by the time the election in 1944 rolls around, most Americans think, okay, we'll elect him to another term. Why not? We've elected him three times before this. But there's a few people who are like, he just doesn't look very well.
Yeah, so in 1940, remember how Roosevelt had some people up against him in trying to get the nomination for the Democratic Party? Well, in 1944, pretty much everybody is on board with him running again. He makes it very clear that he's seeking another term, and there are a few of the Southern Democrats that vote for somebody else, but for the most part, they want Roosevelt. They don't want Vice President Wallace, though, because he, you know, it's kind of crazy a little bit. So they also, I think there's probably the idea, you know, that maybe he's not doing as hot as he could be health-wise. And so Vice President Wallace is probably not who they want to be in the presidential seat should something happen to President Roosevelt.
Such an amazing story.
Yeah, it really is. We definitely need to do, well, I guess we are doing an episode on him. So
if we're lucky.
If we're lucky, that'll be interesting. Basically, Roosevelt and Truman, who they end up bringing in to be his vice president, win the 1944 election. They defeat Dewey and Bricker with 53% of the popular votes and a whole ton of electoral votes, 432 out of 531 at the time. And so really people are looking forward to a bright future along with the strong United Nations, recovering out of this war that's been happening and winning the world war. But things are not looking so great for Roosevelt's health.
Yeah. So, you know, FDR, he goes to Yalta and has his conference with Stalin and Churchill. He comes back from Yalta and he looks noticeably frail. In March of 1945, Roosevelt goes down to Warm Springs, Georgia. He's about to appear before the founding conference of the United Nations on April 12th. And Roosevelt says, "I have a terrific headache." He falls over. He's posing for a picture. You know the story, right? There's a lot that can be said about that.
Yeah.
But anyway, he slumps forward in his chair, unconscious, carried to his bedroom, and he has a cerebral hemorrhage. And by 3:35, Roosevelt passes away.
So, of course, they place him, his body, in a flag-draped coffin. They load him onto the presidential train to head back to Washington. And as he's on that trip back to Washington, as you can imagine, just thousands and thousands of people are flocking to the side of the train tracks to pay their respects. And he has a funeral at the White House and is transported back to Hyde Park, where he was born, from Washington, D.C., by train. And he was buried in the Rose Garden of his estate in Springwood, just like he wished. It's really odd, or maybe it's not odd as we would think. I mean, now in today's age, if there's even a sniffle in the president's nose, we hear about it. But at the time, you know, it was a lot easier to keep physical health ailments away from the general public. And so while the people near him kind of knew something was up, the rest of the world was just shocked and grieving quite a bit. You know, most of the time, any president that passes away, whether it's, you know, from being sick or from being murdered, everybody's sad. But this is just very unexpected. And he was on, you know, he won four elections. People liked him. That's all there is to say about that.
Yeah, and along with the physical infirmities, is the the improprieties that were glossed over as well.
He was
not the most faithful of husbands to his wife, and he took that legacy right until his final days. But why would we end the episode talking about that, right?
Right. So, obviously, he is considered to be one of the most important figures, especially most important presidents. That doesn't necessarily mean you love him or hate him one way or another. It just means that his impact kind of can have, you can't understate his impact as far as being a president in these here United States. Definitely one of the most influential figures of the 20th century. And he probably ranks right up there as far as, you know, the most amount of impact presidents have had, along with George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. And political scientists have consistently ranked him there with those individuals as well. Coming out of the Great Depression, going into the war and coming out of the war, definitely expanding the government by leaps and bounds, definitely did a lot of different stuff that changed the scope of our government and our country.
Yeah, literally brought the country through a completely different era. And speaking of different eras, we will be talking about some of the people surrounding FDR, which might be as interesting as FDR himself. So stay tuned.
Yeah, for sure. While you're staying tuned, whatever that means these days, because I guess, like, you know, if a podcast ends, it just goes to the next one. I think they said stay tuned because they didn't want you to leave whenever the commercials were on the TV, but...
Oh, goodness.
We don't have commercials. Well, we do have commercials on the podcast. But anyway, the whole point is, go ahead and leave us a review and a rating over on iTunes. You can head over to iTunes directly and search for us, or you can go to electioncollege.com/iTunes and leave us a review. We really appreciate that. Tell a friend. All that good stuff.
Yeah, and while you're not staying tuned because you're doing other productive things like surfing the internet.
Or just surfing in general.
Yeah, dude. Interact with us. We're all over the place. Twitter, Facebook. We still have that Instagram account. I haven't done anything with that in a long time.
No.
But we'll know if you say something to us.
We will. We'll see it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next time.